You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into today's Friday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. I'm going solo today without my co-host Tony East. Another one of these short podcasts, probably going to go about 12 minutes if I had to say. A couple quick housekeeping things. You can follow the show at Locked On Pacers on Twitter, or you can follow me at FriedmanAdam5. You can tweet any kind of comment you want at me, insult, positives, negatives, whatever. Give me all your hot takes on the show, any questions you have, whatever you want to do, send me those on Twitter, and I will respond to you on Twitter and probably on you on this podcast. So for today's show, I'm going to do three just kind of quick thoughts on the Pacers. I'm going to go three major ones. But before we get to that, let's take a quick commercial break. Welcome back in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. Sorry for the quick ad break, but I got to pay for my meals somehow. So my first big thought is on Victor Oladipo. There's not any one particular thought, but it's a lot of things. So the first one, kind of part 1A of him, is that he is going to average 20 points a game this season. I think it's almost a lock at this point. If he does that, he's going to be an all-star, because I think the Eastern Conference is lacking so little depth in the the star-level positions. I mean, there's probably 8 to 10 guaranteed all-stars, leaving 2 to 4 spots open depending on injuries, things like that. Like, Isaiah was an all-star last year, but he might not be one this year because he got hurt. But if he averages – if only they can put up 20 and 23 points, which he's kind of, I think, going to be on pace to do, I would say 21 is probably a good guess for him. He's going to be an all-star, and it's just kind of a good hope for this Pacer team because we lost an all-star, so we gained an all-star in some sense. But then kind of part 1B of him is just the way he's been scoring is so sustainable that it's encouraging. So he's getting a lot of his points from the free throw line and at the rim. He's shooting about 7 free throws a game. I don't have the stat for his at-the-rim shots, per se, but at least 2-point field goals he's putting up. I think I've got it in front of me. He got 13 a game, so not always at the rim, but he's doing a nice job of getting to the rim and getting fouled. So the way to make a leap in the NBA is to go from being, you know, where Paul George was last year, of borderline all-star, borderline superstar to superstar, is get to the line 8 to 10 times a game and make easy buckets. So Oladipo covers both those, checks both those boxes. You think about it, he gets to the line because he drives to the rim, but he gets a lot of easy points on pushing the ball. I noticed this in the Minnesota game and a little bit in the Thunder game, but he'll a ball end up loose, some kind of, scramble play, and he'll just push the ball right up, even when he's on 1-on-3, but because the defense isn't set, doesn't know what to do, he just goes right at the rim and hits a layup. Because he's got so much length, and he's got, the ability to, the snap of a finger, to switch the way he goes. I mean, he's just really good at getting to the rim and hitting layups. It's kind of like Westbrook. You see that Westbrook has that lunge thing where he kind of lets his body kind of come in to block the defender out and leaves his arm down and flicks it in. Steph Curry does that on layups too. It's a lot of these smaller guys do this kind of thing with their butt where they push the guy, keep the defender behind them and flick it in with their wrist. He's really good at that. And so, I mean, it's just getting in the line still for him. I mean, if he continues his aggressiveness, which I don't see him losing that, it looks like that's like becoming part of his game, is just being aggressive, then yeah, he's going to be an all-star this year. And, I don't think he's going to start. I mean, it would take fans like you guys out there, Pacer fans, to vote him in, so maybe they can do that. I mean, Pacers have had starting players before in the lineup. I mean, I think O'Neal used to start, Reggie Miller used to start. I mean, so it's possible to vote him in, but I'm thinking that he is probably one of the best 12 players in the Eastern Conference right now, to this date, and I don't see how it kind of falls off unless he just goes into a complete slump. But shooting-wise, I mean, he's almost touching the 50-40-90 club. My co-host Tony East tweeted this out. He is 50% field goal, 44 from 3, and 88 in the free throw line. I mean, he is, I don't know if that's sustainable long-term, but if he is still in the, 45, 38, 80 club, he's probably still putting up 20 points a game just with his shot count. So he's been awesome. He's the most encouraging sign because it looks like he was the centerpiece of that Paul George trade, and, he may not be on Paul George's level, even though he did beat him in stats last night. Remember that, Paul George. You can complain all you want about didn't have stars, but he outplayed you last night. But, he looks like a center, a piece for the future. I mean, he's definitely a second best player on a team, maybe possibly to a Turner. I mean, looking forward. I mean, you gotta look at this team through the prism of where they're going to be in 3 years. he is definitely part of their three-year plan. My second thought of the night is to look at the overinflated stats of the Pacers. And I mean this in the context of if the Pacers score 130 points a game, how valuable will some of their, you know, non-long-term piece guys be at the trade deadline? So we're talking guys like Bojan Bogdanović, Darren Collison, Corey Joseph, and Thaddeus Young. Those main four. I don't think anybody else on this roster really puts up a ton of stats that isn't in the long-term future. I mean, Jeff is going to play minutes, but he's one and done. He's a throw-in to get rid of his contract or an expiring deal. But so right now, Darren Collison averaging 15-8 a game. He is shooting 52% from the field, 37% from three, and 88% from the line. I mean, that's an awesome stat line. That's not quite Oladipo's 50-40-90 club, but that's incredible for a guy like Collison, who's 30 years old, has been in his league, really has never been kind of a guy who's been able to put up more than 12 to 15 points, and he's clearly above 15 points a game. So, like, what would a team be offering? All of a sudden, you know, teams will look at that and look at the stats and say, oh, maybe we want to trade for Collison. It's something to look towards. I mean, the same thing with Bogdanović. Bogdanović can get hot at some point. He's going to get a lot of open looks if, you know, this team has managed to score a lot of points without him getting really hot. He was played pretty well in the Thunder game, but he's the same way. If he can get his stats up to 15 points a game as well, that would be kind of an impressive year for him. I mean, those guys have been starters ever. I mean, if Bogdanović got to 15 points a game just because of overinflated stats, that'd be his best season in his career. And then Thaddeus Young is going to be Thaddeus Young, so I'm not worried about his stats. But I'm just saying, overall, a lot of these Pacers players' stats are going to be a little bit higher than normal would. Like, the mean in the league might be points score-wise would be like 105. The Pacers might be averaging 110. I'm not saying they're going to win a lot of games, but, you know, they're going to be, you know, playing games in the 110s, probably losing a lot, but playing a lot of games in the 110s. Hopefully it doesn't go a lot like Oklahoma City last night, but still. So that's kind of my thought, is if these stats get padded or overinflated, does the trade value of these guys change, which could be good long-term? Because if they could flip Collison, Bogdanović, or Young, one of those guys, for a future first-round pick, that future first-round pick could be the player the Pacers need in 3 years. Because like I was saying earlier, you have to view the Pacers in a three-year lens of where they're going to be in 3 years. Who's a guy that can start or be the sixth man on a team in 3 years? And Collison, Joseph, Young, and Bogdanović are not. They're not going to be on this team in 3 years. I mean, you know, Joseph is the only one I could see, maybe because he's 26, but I imagine he's a free agent. They're not going to want to pay him the money to be kind of the number one guard, because I don't think they might have a draft pick next year that could be a point guard. There's just too much in the air for Joseph to be in the long-term plans, versus all the other guys on the roster are locked up at least for three more seasons, if not more, because they're on rookie deals where they can then match any restrictive offer. I mean, there's those kind of thoughts. So, you know, it's something just to look towards. Obviously, we're only five games in, so not a huge deal, but just to look towards that in the future. You know, if Collison has a career stats year, if Bogdanović has a career stats year, because the Pacers are playing at such a high pace and scoring a ton of points, that could really inflate their trade value for other teams that don't necessarily look into the Pacers as like, oh, man, the Pacers are playing at like, are scoring 5 or 10 more points than the league average because they're just not playing defense and they're playing games to 120 every day. So then for my third thought is, the most important thought of this whole one is, how do the Pacers incorporate Miles Turner back into this lineup? I'm not here to say that Sabonis is better than Turner, that Turner shouldn't start, that whatever Turner... No, Turner is the hope and best chance at becoming relevant again player on this team. Yeah, Oladipo is good and Sabonis looked good, but if the Pacers are going to become a playoff team in the next 2 or 3 seasons, it's going to be on the back of Miles Turner. So he's going to get his starting center spot back whenever he comes back. Hopefully it's this Sunday against the Spurs. You never know with concussions. 3 to 5 days, usually the minimum. You just never know. And you don't want to rush him back because, I mean, it's a serious issue, head trauma, whatever. But, you know, when they bring him back, there's got to be some kind of – they have to figure out how they want to play Sabonis, because Sabonis looked awesome. I mean, clearly Sabonis' natural position is to be the center. Clearly, I mean, he has been – a bruise down low. Yes, he struggled against the Thunder, but it was a back-to-back, and it was a game against his former team, and he's probably overhyped. I mean, like, you could see the writing on the wall for him having a bad game. But if he plays like he's been playing, kind of a, I think right now he's like 11-10 guy, basically. I mean, that's like he basically turned the Pacers from what was considered a mediocre three rebounding team coming into the season to maybe one of the best could be. I mean, I hate to keep comparing former Thunders to Thunders, but he reminds me of Steven Adams a little bit. Kind of guy who doesn't necessarily need to shoot a ton of threes, but is down low, trying to make plays, block shots, rebound, rebound, rebound. I'm going to keep saying it, rebound. He wants to just be down there getting rebounds. It's like his job. That's kind of what Steven Adams is to Russell Westbrook. He's the guy that Russell Westbrook's going to shoot threes, and he might miss some, and Adams is going to bang his body down low to get rebounds for him. That's what he reminds me of a little bit. So the question will be, when they bring Turner in, so I have a couple thoughts. Either they can move Turner to the four, which is a semi-more natural position for him. It depends. I'm not sure he can defend any stretch. I mean, he can kind of defend stretch four, like Carmelo. But if a guy like PG was to play a stretch four, I don't think he'd guard those kind of guys. But it would make kind of sense because Turner is kind of a more outside the paint type of player. The problem with that, if he puts a bonus down low, is you've kind of given up on being the stretch team. You kind of adopt a different identity, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because I think this identity of being small and shoot three all the time is not necessarily the way every team can win. I think it's the way the Warriors can win because they have Steph Curry and they have Klay Thompson and now they have Kevin Durant. Like, those guys are built to play that way. But I think there is some middle ground in the NBA where you could have a bruiser like Sabonis in and play a guy like Turner and sort of figure it out. Maybe even the way it works is Sabonis comes off the bench and Turner splits his minutes between center and power forward. I don't know what it is, but I don't think you can put Sabonis back at power forward because clearly he's meant to be the center. I mean, he's proven, you can see it, he's meant to be the center and he looks really good out there. I mean, he is a rebounding machine out there. I mean, he's pulling in offensive rebounds. He's averaging 4 offensive rebounds a game. I mean, that's incredible. That's second chance points all over the place. That's why the Pacers won against the Wolves because Sabonis was playing all over the place. So it's just a thought. You know, I think ultimately Turner comes back. They figure it out. I mean, maybe it's simple. The simplest thing is you trade away Thad Young, you put Sabonis in the starting lineup, and you make it Sabonis at the 5, Turner at the 4, and they have them just constantly kind of switch between who's playing center. And maybe you groom one of them like Sabonis to be able to guard outside players, you know, with speed. Because maybe you can figure out some system where, like, you can have kind of a twin tower thing. I mean, I know they're trying it out in New Orleans with Boogie and Davis. I watched a little bit of their game on Monday. Davis got hurt the first quarter, so it didn't matter. But I watched a little bit of that game. But there's that kind of thought there, right? Maybe you could bring in those two guys to be sort of like a twin tower kind of, you know, that's a bad reference because of twin towers. But two kind of big, tall, stronger center kind of guys to be in position to sort of change the league. Because, you know, the NBA is about being where you want to be in 5 years, not where it was. So, you know, they talk about it's a copycat league. But you got to try new things, and I think there's definitely a new way to win besides just playing the way the Warriors play, because I think that's just not, you know, doable by teams that aren't the Warriors. So those have been my three thoughts on this Pacer week. This is our Friday podcast, so I hope you have a great rest of your weekend after this show. We'll be back again on Monday, and of course we'll be back again all next week. Pacers play Sunday, so there might be another podcast, actually. Tony might do a Spurs preview. Look for that on Saturday or Sunday. If not, I hope you enjoyed this one. Hope you listen to us on Monday and enjoy Sunday's Pacer game and have a great rest of your day.